the horses are at the gate, and the horses, Bill and Tom, I guess, Bill Buckmaster with you on this side of the glass and on the other.
Is this the red run for the roses or the run for the petunias?
Run for the roses on this International Women's Day. Happy International Women's Day to all of the women. And hope it's a good day for everybody. It's the Buckmaster Show. On this March 8th, 2024, we are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the growing presence of Bustos Media in Tucson. We now have 5 radio stations under one roof here, and this one is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We're now in our 14th year with our radio program and our 36th year involved with Tucson Broadcasting. We have our worldwide live listening, all of the podcasts, 13 full years now of programs archived very conveniently for you at buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, our live line, which we will be utilizing extensively today, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. My co-media host is on one of the live lines, on line 2, and that's Tim Steller. 2022 Arizona Newspapers Association Columnist of the Year. Tim, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Now, I just realized it's 2024 now. I better win some awards quick so you can think of something more recent to list.
Yeah, you need to bag one for 2024. I don't know when that competition is, but anyway, you wrote extensively your 2 columns this week. One of them very, very pertinent to our guest about Senator Sinema, basically saying she's done, she will not be standing for re-election. So I'm very anxious to get the take from our Friday Focus interview, Tim, and that's with Mike Noble. Mike is on our live line, one of the live lines, line 1, founder of Phoenix-based Noble Predictive Insights, which is a full-service market research, nonpartisan public opinion polling and data analytics firm. And it's always a pleasure to have Mike back on the Buckmaster Show. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. It's always a pleasure to be back, Bill.
Well, let's begin with the Senator Sinema story. What's your take? I know it's probably early to get any kind of polling now, but with her out of the race, it certainly clarifies the race, doesn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it absolutely does. So it's interesting that all the talk, and frankly, the most common question, I mean, I'd be in the grocery store picking out vegetables, and I'd be asked, is Sinema running or not?
Yep.
So it was commonly asked, and so it was interesting because you normally always see the two-way race between, I like to say, the red team and the blue team. But with Sinema, you know, you have this third X factor in there, and it's unique because she wasn't just any, you know, most third-party candidates usually don't have name ID or black cash and all these other things. But Sinema was not only an incumbent senator, but also had name ID. She had $10 million in the bank, et cetera. So she was viable. So it was a really unique curiosity in Scouting Press. But 2 weeks ago, I predicted that she was going to drop out. So it was nice to see it was correct. But basically, with the race, with her jumping out of it, what that does, it makes it clear. But also, okay, where does her support go? Because she was at 23% in the three-way race when we polled it. Well, we actually know, based on the data, where her support would go. And actually, Ruben would be the better benefactor of this. So about of her 23% of support, 12% of that would go over to Ruben, 6% would go over to Lake, and the other remaining 5% would just go into the unsure column. But basically, with this change, what it means, the takeaway, is that this is better for Ruben Gallego and not as good for Carrie Lake, because she's down about 10 points to Ruben if the election was held today. But the election's not until November, so we have some time.
Yeah, before I bring Tim in to follow up here, I was just curious, Mike, 2 weeks ago you were thinking she's done. What had led you to that opinion at that particular point, Mike Noble?
Good question. So there's a couple of things that factors that basically played to reach that conclusion, which was a couple of things. Was one, she was struggling to raise money. yes, she had $10 million cash in the bank, but ever since she left the Democratic Party, you've noticed fundraising-wise, she hasn't been able to go above that $10 million. She basically raised as much as she spent. So there's point one. So, you know, because she's going to need about $30 to $40 million in that race to be competitive, and $10 million is a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but that's not going to cut it. And then the other factor, I'd say the biggest factor, is really the signatures. So signatures are due at the beginning of April. Even though she's running as an independent, all signatures are due at the same time. And so she would have, and this was as of like 4 or 5 days ago, she would have had to collect, just to get the minimum, not even have your cushion in there, she would have to get like 1,400 signatures a day. Anyways, that would have cost her a lot of money. She didn't have a grassroots. And then the third thing in polling, the window has closed. So since Lake announced in the race, Sinema was taking about 24% of Republicans, now only taking about 12%. So basically the polling window is closing. And based on those other factors, that's basically how I got to the conclusion that she's probably not running.
All right. Let's bring in now my friend Tim Steller from The Star.
Hi, Mike. I want to check with you. Isn't there a race on the Republican side in that U.S. Senate race?
You know what? I'm glad you asked me, because my last 12 interviews, I'm pretty sure almost all 12 of them completely skipped past the primary. And Tim, this is why Tim is one of the best reporters in the state of Arizona,
yes,
is that he's correct, is that there's still a Republican primary going on, because there's Pinal County Sheriff Mark Lamb, who's still in there, and he's raised, I think, based on the last report, he was up to like $1.4 million raised, which, you know, means you're a serious candidate. And so Lamb's still in there, but, you know, if the election were held today, our last poll had it at 54% Lake, 21% Lamb, with about 17% unsure. Basically, the primary right now, the horse race, looks like kind of like how Trump versus Haley was, being about up about 30 points. But what the wild thing about this is, like that horse race being so lopsided, is that when you look at their images, like the candidates themselves, the product, is that Mark Lamb has a way better favorability among the general electorate. So basically he would do really well in the general, where Lake is kind of fully defined and a little bit negative. So he's better general election candidate, but in the primary among Republican voters, his numbers are just as good, if not better, among Republican primary voters, which is wild, which normally when they're that close, you would think it'd be much more competitive. But in this new era of politics with this MAGA dynamic, you know, it's a pretty lopsided race, at least as of now.
Wait, so he has good favorability within the Republican Party, but people who like him still are not planning to vote for him? Is that more or less what you're saying?
Correct. So he has just about as much favorability as Lake does, maybe a few points less, but he has a lot less negative among Republicans. He's at like 12%. She's at like 30%. And so when you look at it, that was just kind of mind-boggling to me, as I've been doing this for a decade or so, is that normally when you see candidates that are so paired as well, it would be a much more competitive race. But again, this dynamic, this MAGA dynamic of this kind of this coalition, these Trump voters, you know, really stick together.
Tim, did you have anything more on the Sinema race, or can I move on?
Go for it, Bill. Go for it.
Okay. Overall, Mike Noble, when you look at the MAGA influence here in Arizona, how strong is it at this particular point, Mike Noble?
Well, in terms of the Republican Party,
yes,
as we've seen in the local level, but even the national level, they're basically taking over. So it's quite strong. I mean, you see that, you know, Jeff DeWitt was kind of the chairman of the state GOP, was elected initially, that he was kind of the one that kind of the only one out there thinking that could bridge the gap between kind of this populist movement and kind of the, you know, traditional establishment Republicans. And, you know, as we saw, he got taken out by Kerry Lake and they put in one of their folks. But you see it on the national level as well, with like Ronna McDaniel, you know, getting out, or even other leaders. And you're seeing this takeover essentially happen. So in Republican politics, the MAGA brand is strong. And also, you know, their winning primary is the only problem. They just haven't been able to prove they can win the general election, which is kind of important.
Yeah, and I want to follow up on that, because a couple of days ago, your organization posted Arizona votes blue, but it actually wants a kind of a generic Republican. Could you kind of take a deep dive into that for me, Mike Noble?
Oh, all right. Well, hold on to your socks here.
Okay.
These might blow off. And this is what's also another crazy dynamic is that you look at, you know, I'll lay it out this way, and best way to describe it is that, so for example, you ask early on in a survey, we ask very commonly, it's been asked for a long time, called the generic ballot, because candidates are essentially like products, and then you have the two teams, the Republicans and the Democratic team predominantly. So when you look at them, it's like generically, you're going to vote for Republicans or Democrats, red team, blue team. Republicans are about +4, +5, and they've been that way in the generic ballot for the last year and a half or so. So the state's electorate leans to the right. So when people say, oh, these Californians are moving here and all this stuff, it's turning blue. Well, if that's the case, then why is the electorate, if generically asked, they're leaning Republican? So there's point one. Point two is that, all right, now we look at the elections and the results. So you look at the last election we had, the midterms in 2022. You notice that the MAGA folks, the top four at the top of the ticket, were all MAGA Republicans. You had, you know, Blake Masters, Carrie Lake, Abe Hamada, Mark Fincham. And so those four up top, they ran as a slate, campaigned together, all that stuff. They were very clearly the MAGA slate. Well, all four of them lost in a very strong Republican year. And then further down the ticket, everyone below that won. And then you fast forward to now. So in the generic ballots, you know, R+4, R+5. And then you get further down the survey and say, hey, now I'm going to inject these personalities. All right, Democrat candidate Ruben Gallego or Republican candidate Carrie Lake. Ruben is then ahead by 10 points over Lake. So that's a 14-point difference between the generic and that. So basically the conclusion is that, you know, the state leans right. However, it matters on the type of Republican
that
is coming out of these primaries.
Very interesting stuff. Tim, jump in here.
Well, I wonder, I don't know if this is timely, but it's not very state-wide. I'm wondering if the State of the Union last night, will that just be forgotten, or was it? Does it have political or electoral consequences that you can imagine?
You know, with the State of the Union, it's interesting is that we're finding like stuff like State of the Union or like another iconic thing is like debates. The debates, right? And it was interesting is that we're seeing that they're not having the impact that they historically have had. And you think about, okay, well, why is that? Well, remember, in this big change that we're seeing in politics, one of the big changes compared to like just a decade ago compared to now is just where people are getting their information. Like before, you know, everyone had TV, they had just regular cable, they didn't have like a ton of options, you don't have all these streaming services and all this other stuff now. So, you know, and you had just less mode, so it was easier for them to consume, and folks would typically grab onto that. But now you notice, like in the debates, they do a pre-post survey on the debate, and they're like, no change. You're like, well, like, isn't that the point? Like, normally you would see bigger differences than that, and it's just interesting. The electorate, I guess, is not as engaged in the traditional sense as they were about 10 years or so or now. So it's a little harder to capture their stuff. And I don't see it having as big of an impact. It'll probably be kind of forgotten with, you know, tomorrow's next story.
Are Arizona voters, particularly Republicans, Mike Noble, are both parties, are they dialed into Trump's trials in the four criminal cases? What's their opinion on them generally?
Oh, yeah. So so the trial, we did a whole release on this thing. And basically, when it comes to the trial, like, first off, asking Arizona's overall electorate, with everybody in there, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, when asking them, like, hey, with the Trump stuff, like, one was like, hey, have you heard about it? And, you know, it was over, you know, 95% awareness. So first off, are they aware of it? Yes, they are. Next is, okay, so is he guilty? Is he innocent? Or should we wait to see what the courts, you know, land a ruling, right? And so basically you had one third saying, hey, he's guilty, one third saying he's innocent, one third saying, hey, wait till the results come out. So you have that dynamic. And then also you do have a portion, there's a, like, I don't know, 20% or so, 30% of the GOP that if, you know, we ask questions like, hey, if Trump is actually lands up being convicted, you know, would you still support him? And, you know, you had a chunk of the GOP that said, hey, I wouldn't, which is kind of more that moderate McCain wing, basically, of the party.
All right. We'll get back to Tim Steller. Tim will lead off the questioning after we take the break. But right now, we are going to pause in our Friday Focus interview with pollster Mike Noble to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. And, Tim, have you heard the news about Mona's and the added enhancement up at the bakery?
No, I haven't. What is it?
Well, they applied for a liquor license through Pima County. They were granted the license, and they are utilizing it now. So you could have a beer right now with your lunch up at Mona's Danish Bakery. They're also pouring wine and champagne to go with your orange juice for your breakfast. So a little added enhancement at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Hey, how about a little champagne with a Kringle? Maybe think about that for your weekend. Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. The website's monasdanishbakery.com. I got a lot more, and I know Tim does as well, for pollster Mike Noble. But first, let's take our first break of the Friday Buckmaster Show. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Big shout out to our two media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith. Thanks, Dylan, for your support. And Dan Shear, thanks for your support, Dan, at the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Also, the Arizona Daily Star there. They've always been a great supporter of my work here in town and my media co-host, guest co-host, is Tim Steller, award-winning columnist with the Arizona Daily Star. Tim is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mike Noble is on line one. Mike is a well-known Arizona pollster. He is the founder of Noble Predictive Insights. Let's begin with the governor. Some new polling on the governor's race. Do you want to lead off with that, Mike Noble?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. So we put out, I think it was yesterday, actually. So we haven't put it out for a little bit. So we wanted to kind of update folks on where Governor Katie Hobbs, where her job approval rating is at. She's been at the job for, more than a year and a half now. And be curious to see, how she's doing, because especially in the first 6 months or so, you're kind of in that honeymoon period. And then, then you actually got to get to governing and, could go south, could go north, or you could just kind of stay in between. And it's interesting is that when you look at Hobbs' job approval rating, she's been able to basically extend the honeymoon period. So when she took office, when we first measured back in February of 2023, she was at 43% of voters approved of her, 30% disapproved. What's interesting is in February 24, she's at 51% job approval and 30, or that's say she's doing a good job, 38% say she's not. So basically the same amount of net support. So there's about a 13-point difference among the positive and negative opinions. And so, all right, so looking at that, so she's basically, for every, Republican voter or independent voter that she lost, she was basically able to pick up another voter to replace them, which is pretty impressive. And when you look at that, I'd say is that it's actually really good, because when you're governing for a swing state like Arizona unequivocally is, it's a lot harder because it's so competitive compared to if you're in a state like Utah, which is very Republican, or like Maine, which is super Democrat. Like when you have huge majorities, like you can basically just play to your base and that's it. So it's interesting is that Hobbs, she's been doing a really good job, frankly, with voters, and they're thinking she is. So, all right. Interesting.
All right, let's bring in Mr. Steller. Tim, go ahead.
Hey, Mike. You were mentioning this dynamic where Arizona voters tend to kind of incline to the right by 4 or 5 points, but it seems like a more center-right inclination, because then when we get to a general, if it's a MAGA candidate, we tend to vote sometimes narrowly, sometimes widely for the Democrat, if that's the choice. Mm-hmm. How does that dynamic play out in a race like CD6, Congressional District 6? Juan Ciscomani won relatively narrowly last time against Kirsten Engel. He now has an opponent to the right of him, Kathleen Wynne. Then, presumably if he wins, then he'd go on face angle. How does that dynamic play out, that broader state political dynamic play out in that district?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So what Tim correctly pointed out is one of the two most competitive congressional districts that Arizona is going to have this election cycle. So Arizona has 9 congressional districts. So Juan Ciscomani, CD6, is one of the top targeted ones that the Democrats are going to be coming after pretty hard. And then also the other district is David Schweiker, which I believe he is the first district over there in Maricopa County in the Northeast Valley, which is like Fountain Hill, Scottsdale, Cave Creek. But Schweiker is definitely in the most trouble of the 9 districts. But Ciscomani, interesting. So he's got a primary challenger. I don't think the primary challenger is going to be successful, just due to the fact that congressional races are typically more about funds, and it's typically a tougher hill to climb trying to knock out an incumbent Republican that really hasn't made a ton of people angry, at least I'm aware of. And then you have the general election, though. The general election, like, basically that race is going to be incredibly competitive. It's going to be a nationally targeted race. You're going to see lots of money in there. You're going to see a lot of, big names from the Democratic and the Republican side coming out there to show up in that district. And so with that race and the dynamic, he's going to be attacked from, on the primary side, but the other. And we've seen, though, that the Republicans do come together in the general election, depending on what other type it is. But where we've seen the drop off is that Republicans, if it's a MAGA type one or a more populist one, you get some of those moderate conservatives that either don't vote or possibly vote for the other team. Whereas if it is a regular Republican getting through, it seems like that MAGA crowd lands up sticking with them.
How about reproductive rights, the reproductive rights issue? If that were to be on the ballot, how do you think that would do?
I think it'll pass. But as we're seeing in a lot of these other states as well, is that, you know, in these since Roe v. Wade, that decision came down, and, you know, the federal government basically kicked it to the states, say, hey, you guys figure it out. Now these battles are happening across the country, and at least what we're seeing is that even in pretty strong Republican places like Montana, you know, you're seeing abortion pass. And when we've tested this issue, it's roughly about 6 in 10, or roughly 2/3 of voters, are in favor of abort, or legally able to do it. And it's interesting when you look at the electorate of, hey, how much would it be for, saying, hey, this should be totally banned and 100% pro-life? It's only 10% of the electorate. It's really tiny. And so abortion is a huge, you're going to hear a lot about abortion this election, especially probably in that race as well, because abortion is an issue Democrats have really dialed in. They have the high ground, or, you know, the kind of the majority support. Whereas the GOP, the problem they're having is that there's no unified message. Like, can anyone tell me what the GOP's official position is on abortion? You know, is it pro-life? Is it 18 weeks? Is it 24 weeks? You know, where is that? Because they're a party in disarray. They don't really have that command and control structure saying, hey, guys, this is our position on, the abortion topic. All you guys need to get on board and do that. And so right now it's an issue that you've seen Republicans can't run away fast enough from. Like, heck, look at Blake Masters in last year's election cycle. When it came to the general election, instead of addressing the issue, he literally just deleted it off of his website. I guess one way to, wow. What about that issue? I don't know. What issue? I don't see any issue.
Tim Stellar.
Well, isn't that kind of what's happening now, especially since the ruling from the Alabama Supreme Court that said remaining eggs from IVF therapy, IVF, that those eggs are human under Alabama law. So I noticed that there was kind of a little bit of, if I recall correctly, Nikki Haley, for example, supported that ruling. But it appeared to me that as the polling came in and they heard what people were thinking about it, that the Republican position became very opposed. Is that more or less what happened, Mike?
Yes, pretty much. And that's why you're a great reporter.
Yeah. In vitro fertilization is the phrase I was trying to come up with there. Sorry, I could only think of the abbreviation.
You have to be a master on a lot of topics, Tibbs. I mean, we remember that stuff as well, besides stuff on like zoning cases and everything else. I mean, give yourself grace.
Has there been any polling on our situation at the University of Arizona, the financial issue down here?
No, which is, it's not
a,
yet.
Okay, it's a huge story here. I don't know if you might get into that down the road here.
I wasn't until you mentioned. I mean, it caught my attention. So first off, I heard about the news, caught my attention. But I think you just might have Leonardo DiCaprio and incepted me just now. So I think in the next pop poll, that could be a fun one to ask about, especially looking at the Pima County numbers they come in. So, you know what? I'll make a little note. Can't promise, but chance I'll ask about it.
Okay, here's Tim Stellar.
So, as the legislative races are playing out, the question is always whether Democrats can tie or take a majority in one of the houses. Do you have any sense of which way that's trending, whether the Republicans are going to be able to hold on to their narrow majorities, perhaps expand them, or whether the Democrats are looking kind of set up to at least take a house, a chamber?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Tim. Is that, and, you know, we'll put it in context for folks. So for the last two election cycles, the last two that we just had, Republicans have had only a 2-seat majority in the state House and a 2-seat majority in the state Senate, like the thinnest majority they've had in like 40 years. You know, Democrats are really close to flipping one or both of these, and especially since they have a Democrat governor. Even just one of those chambers flipping could really change a lot of the dynamics of, again, what type of laws are being passed, what things like, for example, if legislature gets one of those chambers, ESAs would be like first on the chopping block for them. And so when you look at the legislature, what we know is that it's too early out right now to start kind of getting more predictions on the races, because what we need to find out first in these legislative races are who the candidates ultimately are. Because what we've seen historically, sometimes on races, there have been a couple districts where like Democrats, you know, didn't even qualify a candidate, which is like, okay, like you kind of you need a dog in the fight if you want to win, right? And so first seeing, because, and also the what type of candidates are on the ballot, and then the next step is what candidates, mainly for the Republicans, what candidates are coming out of these primaries, because especially in these, because of the 30 legislative districts we have in the state, there's basically six that are competitive. Competitive in a sense that, you know, they're within, you know, the races were decided with like under, you know, 10 points or whatever. So they're not safe Republican districts or safe Democrat districts. Like these are really the battleground districts. And when you look at them, and I've done a pretty extensive analysis on it, I use like 12 data sources. And basically it comes out to is that when you're looking at the demographics and of the composition of these districts, three or four of them are pretty suburban, which is not good for the Republicans, where the Republicans, basically, it's really going to matter the type of candidates they're bringing out. Like they have a chance to take that district that straddles the Tempe and, you know, West Mesa or East Tempe, West Mesa area, because it's pretty heavy Hispanic Latino, but it really matters the type of candidate. If they can get like a Hispanic Latino candidate, the Republicans can, I think they could be pretty competitive there. But basically looking at the six that we have, at least from a demographic perspective, you know, a lot of them are more suburban, more college educated. And those are kind of the groups that have kind of moved away from the GOP in the last 4 years. And so basically, I'd say the Democrats have an advantage, but we just still need to get a little more clarity on who the candidates are and stuff like that, because it really does matter in those swing districts. Because if you have like a far right candidate, you know, out there in a swing district, I can already tell you that's going to be real hard, or a far left candidate, it's going to be really hard for them to win. So again, those are kind of the factors and things that we're looking at right now in those districts.
Mike, hey Mike, Sorry, Bill. What are some of the top issues when I don't know if you pull this by race, that is, not by demographic race, but by political race. Mm-hmm. What are some of the top issues that Arizona voters rank, like from, you know, economy, border? I can't imagine what they might be. Education. Do you have that?
Yeah, no, absolutely I do. So when you look at the top issues facing Arizona, like there's a couple ways to go about it. One is you could say, hey, what's your most important issue? So like your number one end all be all issue, or hey, what I personally find it's more insightful to ask like, hey, what are your top three issues? So because, for example, let's say inflation or something is my main one, but you know, real close to it is abortion. But if I had to pick, I'm probably going to pick a pocketbook issue over a social issue, just because, you know, kind of, you know, your Maslow's hierarchy of needs, probably think of it that way. People are always going to, you know, take care of the things most prevalent to them and then work their way out to kind of more luxury items, I would say. And so when we look at it, like overall for the electorate, it's inflation and immigration are hands down the top two driving it for the overall electorate. Followed behind by healthcare, abortion, education, a few others. But when you look at Republicans, two-thirds of them say immigration and inflation. So like those two are like hands down the top two for Republicans. And then when you look at so you'll be hearing about of that a lot in the primaries. Basically, every Republican will have a border ad. By the way, if you have a border shop down there, you probably make a few bucks this cycle, because all these candidates are going to come down there to get their shop.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about water. I didn't hear you say that Arizonans seem that concerned about our sustainability of water in the state.
Oh, yeah. So water, super interesting, right? Is that they used to ask about water. And the whole thing was, I remember it was like 3-4 months ago that the New York Times, I think it was,
yes,
had and their front
yes.
page headline, like, I think it basically said, like, Arizona's running out of water.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Probably could scare some people, right? Mm-hmm. And but then you saw the business community really push back on that and said, hey, that's not true, blah, blah, blah. And then I went around and asked a few folks that are kind of in the water space. And I'm like, hey, what's the deal? Like, we run out of water or what? And they're like, no, we're not. Anyways. And I will caveat all this with that. I am not a water expert. I'm going to start off there. So I'm not a water expert, but yet I'm hearing this from one end. I'm hearing one from the other. And so then I wanted to ask Arizonans, like, hey, do you believe Arizona is running out of water? 6 in 10 of respondents or voters in Arizona said, yeah, we're running out of water, with 23% saying, no, we're not. So only a quarter of them, with 18% like, I don't know, which I thought was interesting. And I really brought it up because I don't think there's a direct answer to it, but I feel like there's some confusion out there because, like, for me, you see what the nationals are saying, but then you talk with folks here locally and they're like, well, that's not the case. And I'm like, well, who's right? But it seems like voters are just as confused as well.
All right. Mike, before we let you go, Tim, any final thoughts with Mike Noble?
Oh, I'm just going to say that, you know, the thing with water is that as long as it comes out of the tap or the hose, people are not really too worried about it. You know, that's generally, you know, the way it is. And the minute it stops flowing, mm-hmm. which it has in some areas where the water table has dropped because of overpumping, that's when you really get freaked out. And I think the urban areas are, you know, so adequately supplied that not many voters really have felt the effects yet.
Mm. All right. Mike Noble, where can people find out more about your business that you founded, Predictive Insights?
Yeah, no, if you want to check out just Noble Predictive Insights, or just Google search it, or, you know, Arizona polling, whatever, you throw whatever in there. We're easily searchable on it. Okay. But what I will mention, and also we're on Twitter, which is just the handle is just the letter N as in Noble, but N Predictive. But we'll put our stuff out there. But I just mentioned on the site, if you go into the content section, we have a treasure trove of, like, all of our press releases. We post on there. We have blogs, insights, and all this. Anyways, if you're into data and all this stuff, voter stuff, anyways, you'll find a treasure trove of items in there. And you can always sign up on the newsletter and stuff on there as well.
All right. A ton of content there for you on your website. And we very much appreciate your visit again with us, Mike. Until next time, take care, okay?
Thank you, Bill. It's an honor and privilege. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Tim Steller, stay on the live line because I've got a couple of things for you. But right now we'll take a break on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Sorry to report another Tucson broadcasting legend has died. Really a personal friend of mine and very influential in my career, actually, over at PBS6. Jack Paris, legendary TV executive, friend of a lot of us in the broadcast community. This being reported on Facebook by another friend, Ray Lindstrom. That Jack passed away at Tucson Medical Center this morning. By his side, his son, Pat, Pat Paris, the anchor at Channel 9, was with Jack at the end there. And Jack was really a pioneer. He was the general manager at KGON 9 for many years, and then I knew him. He was my general manager at for a lot of my 22 years over at KUAT Channel 6. TV, and I gotta say, in my time in TV, great guy, best GM that I had ever worked for, certainly on the TV side. Jack had just turned, a couple of months ago, 90 years old, so very sorry to have to report that my friend Jack Paris has died. Tim Steller is with us, award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Hey, Tim.
Hey, we'll have to say one-time award-winning or past award-winning at some point here. I got to get some awards really fast.
Yeah, past award winner. You had a column on Senator Sinema. We won't spend too much time with that because we kind of covered that with pollster Mike Noble. But you also reported, had an extensive piece about what's going on at the U of A. What's your latest feeling on President Robbins and the situation there?
Well, he has, those who support him have, kind of come to the plate and announced their support. There's a group of legislators, there's a group of local business people, quite a few members of the Board of Regents have kind of stood up for him. I mean, obviously the big question is, will he be ousted as a result of this? And I think so far the answer is no. But you never know how things are going to turn. Maybe that's not the most important question in a way, because I think for me, what really struck me about this whole situation is how it could have taken place without anyone noticing until it had gotten as far as it had. In other words, until we were at a $177 million annual deficit that's, essentially would use up all of UA's reserves in a few years if we were to continue spending like this. And, some people have reacted. The Board of Regents has set up some additional checks and stuff like that. But I'm kind of unconvinced. I feel like one thing that faculty have suggested to me is, one thing that it lacks at the U of A is a kind of an independent controller, somebody who can blow the whistle, somebody who's put in a position like a inspector general in the federal government or something like that, someone who's there to keep an eye out. And I think there's always going to be trouble or the threat of danger, financial danger, and other kinds of mismanagement the way our universities are set up. A lot of power put in the hands of the presidents.
Well, the governor has been pretty strong on all of this. She's even inquired about whether she could fire some of the Board of Regents.
Yeah. A lot of this seems to be centered on the now former chair, Fred Duvall. The Faculty Senate, their ire has been focused on him. And the governor also was really criticizing him. And as this built into a kind of personal conflict, Fred Duvall decided to step down as chair, remove himself from the kind of hot seat. And he's still on the board, but they are planning to elect Cecilia Mata of Sierra Vista as board chair. And so, really built up to a week or two ago to big boil this conflict with the governor, but I think they're starting to kind of tamp it down into a low simmer now.
Are you doing anything at the book festival this weekend?
Yeah, let me see. I love the book festival, by the way. Probably my favorite weekend of the year. I'm moderating the presentation by Cameron McWhorter. I'm looking at the book now just so I can get the title of his book right. This is tomorrow afternoon at the Arizona Daily Star tent. His book is called American Gun, The True Story of the AR-15. And then on Sunday morning, that one's at the Arizona Daily Star tent. On Sunday morning, I am moderating a panel with Marie Arana, who wrote the book Latino Land, and Hector Tobar, who wrote the book Our Migrant Souls, both of which deal with the Latino identity and population in the United States.
I'm going to give a quick plug. Let me give a quick plug. I'm going to be doing a one-on-one with Luke Russert, the son of the late famed Meet the Press host Tim Russert. I will be doing a one-hour one-on-one with Luke, his son, and that will be in the Kofler Building at 10 a.m. I hope to see a bunch of listeners out there. I think that room is pretty good-sized room, seats about 300 people, so we'll see.
Wow. Yeah. He has a book out, I take it?
Yeah, about his dad and how he dealt with a bunch of grief, and he traveled the world, I think more than 60 countries, sort of to find himself. And because I'm in the middle of deep grief, I think the organizers thought, well, this Buckmaster, that sounds like...
Yeah, and you're a good match because you're also a world traveler.
Yeah, I mean, that's... That I think it checks a couple of the boxes anyway. So, all right.
Yeah.
Tim, thank you very much. We'll see you out at the book festival, okay?
Thank you. See you there. Take care, Bill.
All right. Coming up next, Dan Gibson with Weekend Watch.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
All right, it is time to do a Weekend Watch, which officially, for Buckmaster fans, kicks off the weekend. Dan Gibson is our host of Weekend Watch, which is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive. Not that bad at all from the Tucson area. And a spring over in the Gila National Wilderness, delightful. The perfect time of year to make the road trip over there. Late winter, early spring, delightful. SouthwestNewMexico.org. Is their fine website. You'll be very tempted by lots to do, great places to stay and to dine as well in historic Silver City. Here he is, Dan Gibson, the host of Weekend Watch. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm great. You know, it's Festival of Books weekend, right? What more could you ask for?
Yeah, big weekend anything, for all the literary weekend of the year is here.
Well, let me give you a couple things not book festival related, just in case you hate reading or something. I don't know, whatever. But then we'll follow up with a few book festival recommendations as well.
Okay.
Tonight, Rito Downs Park, it is the Military Appreciation Concert as part of the Coligard Classic by Exact Science. This is a great lineup, actually, of musical acts connected to the Coligard Classic. They've always had like a concert to sort of kick off the event. This is this one this year, but they moved it to Rito because the golf tournament itself is at La Paloma. It is headlined by Tucson's own Midland. Well, at least the lead singers from who went to South Point. So we're going to claim Midland as our own. Great sort of modern country act. Also, Arizona legends Roger Klein and the Peacemakers will be playing. Tickets start at 45, or I think they're they went up. Sorry, you missed your window at 45. Now I think they're 65 if you go to the door. Okay. But there's also a VIP option as well. It's a separate ticket from the golf tournament. So you got two different things, just so people know.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And Midland, they're great. They do a great cover of Eastbound and Down by Jerry Reed. So just something to look out for.
All right.
Via Peru. I don't know if you have you been to Via Peru up on River in Campbell?
Not that particular Peruvian restaurant, no.
Oh, yeah. The other one, well, let's go sometime. We'll meet up.
Okay.
They're having Oyster Fest right now, March 7th through 9th. They've got far too many oysters, apparently, and they've got a whole lobster and oyster tower they're selling. Five different oyster dishes served in Peruvian style, including a complex oyster ceviche that is, as they say, bursting forth with flavor. No additional charge or anything, just order off their menu, but they said it's helpful to get reservations. You can get them online, open table, super easy. So, book festival.
Yep.
Dan Gibson's pick. I know everyone's been waiting and asking, what would Dan Gibson go see at the book festival? Well, I'll tell you. I would say Power and Pitfalls of the Online World is a great double header of authors. It'll be at the Integrated Learning Center, Saturday, March 9th, 11:30 a.m. Kyle Chayka writes, he's a staff writer for The New Yorker. He has a new book called Filter World, which is about how algorithms have sort of flattened the way we perceive culture. And then Taylor Lorenz, who is a controversial figure in journalism, a technology columnist for the Washington Post. She has a book out called Extremely Online. You may have seen her as someone liberals champion and conservatives hate. So a lot of drama there, all happening in one place.
Yeah, a lot going on. So many different choices. And I'm doing an event at 10 Sunday morning in the Kofler Building with Luke Russert.
That's a great get. Yeah. They picked the right guy for that.
Oh, well, thank you very much. All right, Dan, I might see you over at the Book Festival. I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right, you too.
All right, The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content. Thanks, Tom Fairbanks. Great job as usual, engineering and producing. Have a great weekend, everybody.